The Rosh Hashiva Rabbi Einemer in the Shabbos Shuvah Drasha mentioned quite at the beginning about the Indian of Hakaras HaTov and the importance as a schus for Yom HaDin. And 2 years ago, I think, when we had just started, we were also together. And at that time, with 1 month's experience, we were very taken by the tremendous reception and warmth of the community. And I feel 2 years have gone by, and it's only increased manyfold. And I would like to express the hakaras hatov of everyone in the yeshiva for everything in every way, whether it's the financial support, the physical, logistical support, which is not always easy, for the warmth and the tremendous personal goodwill that people have shown the yeshiva and the bachrim, the close kesher. And on the personal level, the fact that I've received a tremendous amount of warmth and whatever I could possibly need, and I want to just express that hakaras hatov on behalf of both the yeshiva and myself. The Gemara says, "Gdoila refuah shemeviya, gdoila tshuva shemeviya refuah loylam." Tshuva is great because it brings about healing in the world. The Gemara proceeds to list seven types of greatest tshuva. It brings redemption and so on. Chazal were not, they didn't use words and flourishing statements. If we were to take out a thesaurus, I'm sure we could come up with at least 25 benefits tshuva brings. Benevolence, blessings, healings, goodwill, kindness. You can pull out a whole page full of. Chazal singled out seven things. So healing is the very first one of them. And we have to understand, what does it mean that healing is something that tshuva brings about? It's doubly problematic because what does it mean, in what context is the word healing used? Does it mean that sick people get better in schus of tshuva? If that's true, then it's strange. It's like every other benefit. When Kol Yisrael does good things, when they do mitzvahs, so everything goes well. The fact that when Kol Yisrael is doing tshuva, they become tzaddikim again, so naturally everything falls into sync as if they were doing good. It doesn't need anything special. It doesn't need a special mention of this more than anything else. If healing means that the avera is forgiven, and it's just a metaphor for forgiveness, if that's what healing means, then it's even more problematic, because it's like saying, if I say that this doctor is a good person because he heals patients, I mean, well, that's what the definition of a doctor is. I could say he's a very good person because he shows extra care. He's a very good person because he's nice besides being professional. I would look for something else, but I say greatest tshuva because it brings about healing. If the word of healing, if the sense of the word healing is simply that tshuva helps the avera forgiven, so well, that's what tshuva is supposed to be doing. It's not a greatness of tshuva, that is what tshuva is. So we have a problem in understanding, what does it mean tshuva brings about healing? Are we talking about a physical benefit not linked especially essentially to tshuva? So then it doesn't seem to be especially, it's like all the other blessings that come along when Kasher does good. If it means that avers are forgiven and healing is a metaphor for that, so fine, so well, that tshuva is supposed to do that. It's not supposed to be an extra of tshuva. As a matter of fact, this is also tied in the Shmon Esra. The closeness of Hashiveinu and Rifa'enu, the Gemara darshins as a pasuk. The Gemara says, V'sha v'rafaloi. The Gemara deals with it. Why is it not exact, right next to it? The Gemara speaks about it. But the Gemara also implies that the fact that they're close to Shmon Esra is because Refuah and Tshuva are linked together. And obviously it's of the same nature, the link, and we have to understand why, in what way. It's Psukim, actually. We just learned it in the Haftarah of Erpe Meshuvasam Oyhavim Nedova in Pasha Shuva. It's that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will heal their wanderings. And also it says V'shav V'rafalai, a lot of places. It's in Tanakh, it's quite frequently used as a metaphor for forgiveness. And understanding that it's not just a metaphor, but it's identifying a certain specific property of tshuva is the point that we'll try to see. To, in order to understand it better, in order to get a better grip on what is the healing process in tshuva, we have to focus in a little bit on the concept of healing itself as used in Chazal and in Halacha. The first thing to ponder, the first point to ponder is, the Gemara says, Rabbi Kama, other places, the Pasuk says, V'rapo yurape, mikan shenitin rishus l'roifel rapes. A doctor is allowed to heal because the Torah mentions the fact that a doctor will heal. A doctor is allowed to do refuah because the Torah says you have to pay for it. So obviously it's something that is allowable. The question is, why not? I mean, what's the problem? Because he's interfering with some divine process? Is there a havamina that a person is not allowed to plow his field? Is there a havamina that a person is not allowed to irrigate his crops? We don't find a problem in doing the natural order of things as being a contradiction to divine providence or divine all-encompassing rule over the world. We understand that the world has a natural order, a natural flow, and a person is supposed to do things in harmony with nature. So what's the problem with healing? Why is healing different? It's part of the natural process of the world. A person is hungry, eats. A person is tired, sleeps. And a person is sick, looks for some remedy. What's the problem with that? Also, in the bracha for refuah, it's constructed very differently. It's very different than all the other brachas. All of the brachas in Shemona Esra, we request HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Baruch Aleinu Es Hashana Azayis. We ask that HaKadosh Baruch Hu bless this year and give us crops, parnas, and so on. Fine. Hashiveinu v'nasarasecha, chaneinu mitcha. Every single bracha is a bracha where we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to help us in our endeavors. Refuah is very strangely worded. Refa'enu Hashem v'neirofe, hoishi'enu v'nivashaya. Heal us Hashem, so that we be healed, and help us, save us so that we be salvation, Yeshua. It's a pasuk actually, it's a pasuk Yirmiyah. But it's incorporated as, we speak to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and we tell him, heal us HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so that we really be healed. Why? Why is it different than everything else? Everything else we just implore. We don't say Baruch Aleinu Hashana Azois Kedeshin is Baruch Shnaseinu. We don't say Hashiveinu Kedeshin Asher B'tshuva. It's understandable that Im Hashem Yishma'ir Shav Shakat Shemeh, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't help, nothing gets off the ground. So it's understood as an axiom in every bracha that you make that you're imploring divine assistance, because without that it's not going to go. In refuah, we mention it specifically. And we say, Refa'enu Hashem v'nei rafe, hoishi'enu v'nei vashaya. Heal us so that we be healed, and save us so that we are saved. So somewhere refuah stands out as different from all the other activities, and different than all the other needs of a person. And that needs to be understood very carefully. We'll start with a pasuk. The pasuk says, the pasuk is in Hazinu. Hazinu is a parasha that deals with the entire, it deals with the world proceeding from beginning till end. It's sort of a mini cycle of the entire Klal Yisrael's existence. The Goyen points that out, and he has tremendous clues that he finds in the parasha. Hazinu is a sort of condensed version of the whole Torah and of the different epochs and eras that Israel will go through. Towards the end, there's a pasuk proclaims, Ru'u ata, now see. In other words, after you've seen the entire cycle of history, after you've experienced all that's written here, Ru'u ata, see now, ki ani anihu, I and only I am God. V'ein Elohim imadi, and there is no other force coexisting with myself. Ani amos v'chaya, I kill people, and I make them come alive. Let's pause a second. This is probably the strongest power that we could picture HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and saying HaKadosh Baruch Hu can kill and HaKadosh Baruch Hu can give life. To us, that is the ultimate in omnipotence. There's nothing else we could say that's bigger than that, greater than that. But the pasuk doesn't stop there. The pasuk says, "Mochatzti, I've crushed, vani erpa, and I will heal." I mean, it's anticlimactic. You just said that I have the power to kill, and I have the power to bring to life. And then he says, "And I can crush," in other words, make people sick in some way, and heal them. What does it mean? If it could be mechayim mesim, then healing is obvious. Isn't it? What we're saying, ani omos v'chayim mochatzti v'ani erpa. The same problem we have in Shmoneh Esrei. We say, ata gibor l'olam Hashem, mechayim mesim ata rav loshia. So we start the bracha by saying, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is mechayim mesim. And then, so the other aspects, mechalko chayim b'chesed, mechayim mesim af rabim, somech noflim, all of these might not be as powerful as making someone alive, but Mechal Kachayim Bechesed is another way in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu expresses his hashgacha and his power. But when he says Rofei Cholim, isn't that included in making them being Mechayim Mesim? It's not the issue is not which is greater and which is less, but isn't it the same, just a much lesser version of it? What does it mean we say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, besides being Mechayim Mesim, is Rofei Cholim? The other aspects of it are not they're parallel. They're ancillary. They're not part of the same thing. They're all mechal kol chayim is a different process than mechayim mesim, but rofei cholim is the same as mechayim mesim. What's the difference between the two? It's just a small version of it. So to understand it, let's start with there's the question about Rifa'enu was asked by the Zohar. And the Zohar says an awesome chiddush. The Zohar says the following: Kivun de Amar Rifa'eni Malve Rofe. The Zohar asks it on the pasuk. Yirmiyahu said Rifa'eni Ve Rofe, heal me so that I be healed. He says, isn't it obvious? Isn't it obvious that if HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he asks HaKadosh Baruch Hu to heal you, you will be healed if he comes across with it. So the Zohar says, all healing is in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's hands. But it depends how he does it. There are two types of ways in which he can do it. He can do it himself, and he can do it through a shliach. He can do it through an emissary. He can do it through a representative. The difference is, the Zohar says, that those that are healed by someone who is a representative can become sick again. And those who are healed from HaKadosh Baruch Hu cannot become sick again. That is, so therefore he says, Rifa'enu Hashem ve'rafei. I want the special refuah that comes from Hashem. I'd like to understand that. I'd like to understand, why is it like that? What about if HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what about Parnassah? If HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends Parnassah through an emissary, we can become poor again. And if he does it himself, we can't become poor. Why is that? Why doesn't this exist in every system? Only refuah we find it, this distinction. And that's why only refuah we say Rifa'enu Hashem ve'rafei. What's the difference? So let's try to think a second. In one of the puzzles, one of the riddles that scientists still puzzle, is the distinction between animals and parts of a person that have regeneration to animals, levels of animal life and parts of a person that don't have regeneration. There, a person, a lower form of animal life, will lose half of its self and it'll grow back again, as if nothing. A person will lose skin, it'll go back again. If it's on his finger, it'll have the same fingerprint the second time as well. Exactly the same. And yet, if a person loses something sizable, there is no regeneration. And it's puzzling what determines where there's regeneration, where not. I'd like to understand the riddle a little bit. When a person takes something inanimate and he chops off part of it, so the reason why this part can't grow an extension, forgetting about all the reasons why it can't grow an extension, but it's not even quote-unquote aware that there's another part. Every part is a part unto itself, and whatever you snap off is gone. It doesn't have any connection with anything else. A person, the fact when a person's piece of skin is missing, so that piece of skin is gone. How does it get this piece of skin again? It must be that somewhere, and again, whatever level, there's a system in the body. There's whether the genes or the genes are obvious, but there is a system that identifies and keeps a record. Let's call it. Again, I'm speaking all a bit on a metaphor. It sort of is aware of what the body needs to look like and can fill it in again because there's an original plan to what's there. When a part of a building falls off and you try to rebuild it, so either a person remembers what that looks like and he reconstructs it, or what you usually do is you go back to the plans, you open it, you know, you look at it again and you redo it. There has to be some master plan, some idea, some master idea of what the thing is supposed to look like so that the thing itself can go back again. If some sort of foreign agent invades a person and it throws a lot of his systems into disarray, let's say a person's temperature swings, let's say a person gets temperature and his body is temperature shoots up. So obviously that system is out of control. If there wouldn't be a master system that keeps somewhere track of what the person's temperature is supposed to look like and what the response of his organism to temperature is supposed to be, he could never reconstruct it again. Because if you break the entirety, you've broken it. I mean, everybody today uses computers. People are aware. You have programs that keep track of files that are corrupted by viruses or files that got lost. When you format something, keyless and so on. The first thing that has to exist is some sort of image of what the file is supposed to look like, and then it's possible to identify when it's not okay. But if there is no record of that, there is just no way to mend it. You can redo it again. You can do it again. A person who remembers the text that he wrote in can write it again. But the redoing will only make sense if there is some retention of a picture, let's call it, of that image. And that's why in a person, when retroviruses that invade a person and they corrupt, so to speak, the master file of identifying what's an enemy and what's not an enemy, is deadly because now there's no system to deal with that anymore. You've corrupted that very basic point that retains a record of what's alien and what's part of it. So when we speak of refuah with a kappa, with a resh, we identify two types of refuah. When a person cuts himself and what grows after is scar tissue, that type of refuah, it serves the person well. But it's not a reconstruction and it's not a regeneration of what was. It's just something says you can't leave open spaces in a person and you have to cover it. So put in scab tissue. A person who loses some limb or sense, the body begins to readjust itself and sharpen other senses. These are all not healing in that sense. These are sort of a crutches. The body supplies itself with crutches, but that's not healing. When we speak of healing, we speak of something in the person that can reconstruct that which was. And it can only do it because it never lost it. Somewhere in the person, there was an element that retained the sense of what the person is supposed to look like. Exactly the way the original set of genes had a picture of what the person is supposed to look like. And this serves to recreate the person. So that's what the Zohar means. The Zohar says there are two types of refuah in the world. When we're speaking of practical refuah, crutches type of refuah, those are the type of refuah that an emissary does. It means, listen, a person has an open gash, it's very big, we don't have any more sense of what it's supposed to look like, but you're supposed to patch it up. So it's a patch, it looks like a patch, and it does its job, but that's what it is. The level of refuah that is Enu Hashem, that's a level where you have the master plan still exists. You recreate the person, you regenerate the person, rather than just slap a band-aid on. So the reason for it is because the only thing in the world that cannot be done by anyone in the world is an act of creation. From creation onwards, a person has the world. We have every activity within the world from creation and after creation onwards. We are in charge. Kifshu aretz, redu. We manage. We farm. Everything we do. But creation is something that is outside of a person's realm. And therefore, when you speak of a healing process that is parallel to creation, in the sense that you have to recreate something, that is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If it, by definition, it can't be done by anything that's called an emissary and so on. So when we say Rifa'enu Hashem v'nei Rafa, we're speaking about a specific refuah that is only in the hands of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. All the other endeavors in Shmon Esrei are endeavors that a human being was given the right to do, the possibility to do, except that he needs a Kadosh Baruch Hu's Siyata Deshmaya. We ask for this specific type of refuah, which is really what the Zohar is saying, and we say Refa'enu Hashem v'nei Rafa, because the only way refuah in its real original sense can take place is only through a Kadosh Baruch Hu. The Pasuk says, let's go back to the Pasuk. Ru'u ata ki ani ani hu ve'ein alehim imadi. Take a look that there's nothing but me. Ani omis v'achaya, I kill and I bring back to life. Mochatzti v'ani erpo, I crush and I heal again. What it means is, why is we asked, I mean, isn't it obvious if HaKadosh Baruch Hu kills and turns to life that he heals? The answer is, because the process of killing and bringing to life in the Tchias HaMeisim sense is something that we don't see. We believe in it, but it's you're talking about the whole era of the universe. There's the period of death and the period of life. If we want to see a mini replay of Tchias HaMeisim, we see it in refuah. We see it in refuah because real refuah in the world at the level it exists is Tchias HaMeisim. It's something that was inanimate, and it came to life again. There was no skin over here. The skin was gone. It was cut off. And somewhere there still existed a picture of that skin with all its whorls and all its twists, and it comes back again. So the machatzti ve'erpa is actually the type. It's the recreation in the bria of emes v'chaya. In a way that we can see, in a way that we can relate to it. There's a fascinating, the Zohar says, very fascinating, he says that in Tchias HaMeisim, people will rise again with the same deformities and problems, and you know, physical problems that they had before. And then they will be healed. And the reason that the Zohar gives for it is so that people will not say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created other people. In other words, if this person who was Nifta was an old deformed person, and the one who jumps out is young and healthy and whole. So who says it's Tchias HaMeisim? That's what this is also. Just to understand it in the way we're explaining it, it means it's a much, to create anew is in some ways not as big as a nes as to take that which was there and still, even that same person, HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates new people. We believe every baby that's born, every child that's born, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave it life. But the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu can infuse life in something that died, it means that even when things are dead, they retain a spore, they retain some spark and of what was, and that brings everything back to life again. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu will demonstrate that in the things that were dead, in the things that looked like they were gone, those things have in themselves a force that can reopen it and come to life again. Let's go from the refuah back to tshuva. Tshuva is a process, what we understand, of becoming better people, different people, and so on, which is fine. But for most people, at some point in their life, they begin to say, you know, it's like when you're young, things mend quickly. What already will be, whatever I do now, how much will it, it'll be just a patch. It'll be, I will have slapped on a little learning in my later years. I'll have slapped on a little more careful davening. But most people begin to feel that it's secondary to the nature. The refuah inherent in tshuva is this process. The refuah inherent in tshuva is a process where every person retains in himself somewhere in his psyche, in his neshama, retains a picture of what the person was supposed to have looked like. Somewhere we have that original format that we can relate to. The erpa meshuvasam, when a person begins to do tshuva, what he's doing is not becoming another person, but he's rather beginning to recreate himself. If we hit on the right level of tshuva, then what we're doing is we're regenerating. We're not adding scar tissue, we're not adding scar tissue, but we're regrowing it again, because the omis v'achaya, the tchias ha-meisim, shows itself in the machatzdi v'ani erpa. And just like refuah lies in the bria, and we see it on a mini level, and tshuva is a process that's akin to it, and that's why it's called refuah. I want to. So we've spoken about refuah and the process of tshuva. I'd like to use a few minutes to bring it on a maybe more of a macro scale of Klal Yisrael as a klal. A person wonders a lot of times, a person who's a Baal Nefesh, wonders a lot of times, can it be that a person with his intellect and feelings and the perceptions has to spend such an inordinate amount of time on necessities? A person works in business, he puts in 10, 12 hours a day and the other necessities, and if he does his best, he ekes out an hour and a half for learning a day and davening. So let's say 2 hours out of the day for persons, avodas Hashem, people, I mean, it basically is a maximum for almost anyone busy. And people wonder, is it something, can it be? Can it be? I mean, it seems to be such a not efficient use. A person who has to service machines 22 hours a day to get 2 hours worth of production will be out of business very soon. It's not going to go well. I mean, you try to take down service to minimum. So how can it be that a person has such an inordinate amount of worldly needs that don't really relate to anything that a human being is about in order to do that hour or two of Avodas Hashem? So that's a very true feeling. And it's true that it has no answer, because the person's hit something on the nail. It's a Mishnah. The Mishnah at the end of Kedushin deals with what should a person has to teach his son a profession to earn a livelihood and so on. And the Mishnah focuses on what's an appropriate profession and so on. Reb Shimon ben Elazar Omer, Reb Shimon Elazar said, Ra'isa miyamecha chaya ve'oif, sheish lem umnis. Did you ever see an animal that have a job? Ve'hei misparnesim shaloi bitzar. And they, you know, the parnasa doesn't come bitzar. Meaning the following. And what we call a job, he means something that is only a means to attain something else. So every animal is an element in what it's doing. A lion doesn't just chase for food. Chasing animals for food is what a lion's all about. That's what he's doing all day. It's not a job, and then he comes home to do something else. So he says, and Ella shehayresi masai, I sinned v'kipachti es panasasi, and therefore I lost it. Meaning the following: had Adam HaRishon not sinned, his whole day would have been filled with doing things that make use of man's special stature. That's what Adam HaRishon was there, la'avdol la'shamra. He was there to deal with his neshama. Everything that makes a person was geared for one purpose, and that is to deal with the things that are divine in the creation. We sin, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu said that you will suffer because of it. And the suffering is that he has to spend such an inordinate amount of time taking care of his basic needs. Why is that a tikkun? That's for some other time. But that is the point of the Mishnah. The Medrash says that man, before he sinned, was as big as the world, as tall as the world. That's the statue. After he sinned, HaKadosh Baruch Hu cut him down to 100. HaKadosh Baruch Hu cut him down to 100 amah. That was the first shortening of a person. People make a mistake when they say over the Medrash. They say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu shortened man to 100 amas. It's not the right way to say it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu compacted man to 100 amas. We didn't get chopped off, not at the feet and not at the head. What HaKadosh Baruch Hu did was rather he compacted him. I mean, again, I hate to use a computer metaphor, but it just seems to be so common. When a person has files that are compressed, the files themselves are useless. They don't run anything. They don't do anything. You can't run them. They contain every element of information that you need, but they're not active files. They're compressed. What you do need is you need one file that's running that can uncompress the file, and then the files run well and fine. It uncompresses it. Everything starts from there. So when Adam was compacted, when Adam HaRishon was lowered and was made compact, it means by and large humanity lost its main function in an active way. Most of human activity became occupied just taking care of themselves and not creative in the sense that it was meant to be. This is the Chazal referred to that using the words of that pasuk, "Ani mochatzti v'ani erpa." The Chazal say in Breishis, "Makosei shel olam." The real crushing weight, the real. When did HaKadosh Baruch Hu crush the world? "Makosei shel olam." Ani mochatzti. When did HaKadosh Baruch Hu crush the world? When he took man and compressed him from being in scope his entire world. A complete person, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu compressed him to the size that we are. We're small. We don't have anything of stature. That is the makosei shel olam. If there's to be a process of refuah, in the world, something has to stay of that original coal, of that original genetic setup, an active file, call it however you want, some of that has to stay. I'd like to explain, it's something that most people are not really aware of. What's the purpose of a yeshiva? In a yeshiva in its real sense, meaning not a place, there's an age where we educate children, and it's definitely That's something that you need. It's something that they can't be Jewish without. So we have a level of a school system that gives them the basic Jewish knowledge and chinuch and so on. That's one thing that we understand. There's a need to produce functioning rabbanim, chazanim, shaykh demalim, whatever you want, teachers. That is also something that's important. And that's a function of a learning center. It has all these things are fine and good. But there's a much deeper purpose to yeshiva. And it redefines what a yeshiva is. Yeshivas in the sense that they were understood to be in Europe and here are not places that provide a function. Their tachlis is to exist as that ember. A place where the place itself retains in itself an image of what man is supposed to be like. Man is something that's supposed to be involved with HaKadosh Baruch Hu all day. It can't be done universally. It can't be done by everyone. It can't be done by an entire society. And it's not expected to be done. But if society is to retain in itself a spark that can relight it, an image that everything else can form about, that's only if it retains a model of it. And again, it might be that every single person in the yeshiva has his own compromise with reality as far as job and so on and so forth. But the yeshiva as an environment, as a place, as a base medrash, that is its purpose. To be a place that retains in itself that image of the way man was supposed to be before he was crushed by his averus and crushed by life's demanding burdens. And This we're speaking now under the auspices of the Beis Medrash, but I think it's the right place and right time to say it. The learning people do, whether at home or in other places, is very good. It's tremendous, and it should be mechuzik. But there's something special to come to a Beis Medrash that is a yeshiva today, and be part of it, because whatever you're learning, you do on your own. And your own framework that gives you Torah, and it gives you knowledge, and your Shemayim, and everything. But the glimpse of a world that is focused solely around the Aron Kodesh and the Sfarim Shaf, that's focused solely around Kodesh Baruch Hu, that only exists in a Beis Medrash environment. The Beis Medrash is that nekuda of Chiyus. That's interesting. The Gemara says, you see the metaphor that Chachamim use are so rife. Hamevazet Talmud Chacham. The Gemara Shabbos. If somebody humiliates a Talmud Chacham, ain lo refuah. He has no refuah. Because the refuah, in the sense of being a merape person, can only be from this environment. And if he cuts off, if he kills that germ of mitzias, of chiyus, of tzuras adam, the way it's supposed to be, then that's it. If he kills that master file that has in itself the tzura of what the person is supposed to look like, so he's cut himself off. Ein lo refuah is a very, very specific, Chazal used it very specifically. It's refuah that he's cutting off. So if there's something to be mechazik, it's that besides aiding to learning and starim and so on, but to do it within the yeshiva framework, whether it's with chavrusas, whether it's in shiurim in the yeshiva, or just coming and learning in the yeshiva, that itself is the place where a person has refuah, and that provides him a link to that nekuda of tzuras adam before he was diminished and before he was miniaturized, and it's something in the process of erpa mishuvasa my having the tava. Thank you.